Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Here it comes. Now drive to left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
That's Len.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
Hey, one other question about Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Does he still qualify for the Wookiee of the Year?
Slightly above average bassist.
Len Casper playing against us. Really into it.
Len Casper.
That's Len.
With Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Len Casper is on Twitter, at Len Casper. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. That was a fun couple of days, Len, however you want to slice it, and no matter for which team one roots. That gave us a little bit of everything we wanted.
Yeah, I would agree. Jimenez with the big home run. You know, it's hard not to acknowledge what a special moment that was for a young player who had been traded from one organization to the other. And then the game last night was also kind of weird, right? Lester gives up the home run on the first pitch. Contreras hits two home runs. The ball was flying all over the ballpark with the wind blowing in. I'm kind of with Joe. I don't know if a UFO landed and delivered all the baseballs. We've talked about this the past few weeks, but it's unbelievable how the ball is jumping out of just about every ballpark we see. And then Lucas Giolito, you were expecting him to deal last night, and I guess he was due for a bad one. It had been a couple of months since he looked quite as hittable as he was last night. Good to see the Cubs offense get it back. They had not been scoring a lot of runs. And you walk away with a 1-1 split, and the Cubs are back in first place.
Wilson Contreras was huge, obviously, last night with the grand slam in the first. He did not play in the first game. I'm kind of on the sideline of things like, you know, you have to manage the innings behind the plate for him. I worry so much personally about catchers who are big parts of offenses because it's so physically demanding. It really sounds like they want to manage the workload as much and as often as possible for Wilson. Fan of that?
Huge fan of it. We talked about it about a month ago, and Joe really has made an effort to give him some days off now that we've gotten into the middle of the season. Fortunately, the weather has not really been oppressive, but he led the majors by far in innings caught last year, and you have to think that at least some of it, if not, you know, a lot of it last year in the second half, the big downturn offensively had something to do with him playing every day. Victor Caratini has been terrific, both behind the plate and with the bat, and I think that's given Joe an opportunity to get him in there to catch Darvish. He's caught Hamels a fair amount here lately, and I think it's paramount that Contreras does get rest, and you know, the day after he has a day off, his numbers are eye-popping. So, you know, you can't always do the cause and effect thing, but I think it's pretty obvious that when he gets a little rest, he's better at the plate.
Theo made it clear that, speaking of rest, it might not be the worst thing to add some breadcrumbs in the meatloaf when it comes to spacing out the opportunities for starting pitchers. We know that John Lester, at this stage of his career, sometimes is better off when you force him to take a little bit extra day to get some of his strength back. How do you foresee it going forward if, in fact, I'm bad at assuming this, but if we assume that Kyle Hendricks will be back and okay from this impingement, when do you begin to really get careful with the usage of veteran starting pitchers?
It wouldn't surprise me with Alzolay coming up before the break that they may add a sixth starter. So I'm not totally sure that it's, you know, Chatwood's spot, and then maybe Alzolay takes it the next time, depending on how it goes tonight. It could very well be that if Chatwood pitches well, you know, he makes two or three starts, and then they maybe slip Alzolay in there before the All-Star break. I think that they might leave open that possibility while Alzolay is here. And then beyond the break, I think the Cubs have eight. You might want to check. I think they have eight off days in August or July. One of those 2 months, they have a lot of off days coming up. They haven't had those now, but I think it will ease up a little bit right after the All-Star break. September is pretty packed. So, you know, you want to make sure that you have everybody lined up for the most important month of the season, and it certainly looks like it's going to be a pretty tight race. But I think they will build in an extra day or two for just about everybody when they can.
So two things, Len. One, what does that mean then for Mike Montgomery? Is there a spot start for him, or as that other lefty, is he a guy that Joe would like to keep in matchup situations? And we talked to Taylor Davis just a little while ago on the show. Apparently it is Adbear Alzolay. There is no hard T at the end of this. Just, you know, keep it up to date with all the names we're going to have to go through on the broadcast here.
I love that. Thank you.
Here to help.
I definitely will confirm that. You want to get that right. I think Montgomery for now is in the bullpen, and, you know, everything is on the table in terms of him making a spot start down the road. But I think all else equal, I think Chatwood has more than earned the start tonight. And, you know, the Cubs without Cedeno, who's been on the injured list a couple of times, Tim Collins back and forth, and now off the roster again. Really, it's been Kyle Ryan and Mike Montgomery. We've seen a little bit of Randy Rosario, but I think Montgomery is too important as a left-hander in the bullpen right now than to be a starter.
I can't believe we're still talking about batting average with runners in scoring position, but this really flummoxes me, Len. I'm grasping for answers here, but now through multiple hitting coaches, multiple iterations of hitting infrastructure, different theories, different ideas, but the same core, these guys really struggle to stay themselves in important situations. They're still scoring runs. They're still winning games. But this bedevils me when it comes to this whole idea of clutch versus choke and everything and how it's all defined. But there's been some choke in this team.
It is hard to figure out. I generally, you know, come back to the you're either a good hitter or you're not. And this team has a lot of good hitters. You know, I trust Rizzo in big spots. I trust Bryant in big spots. Contreras has come up with some big hits. David Bodie would be a guy you feel good about, even if the numbers don't say that he can come up with a big hit in a big spot. The bottom line is, other than the second half last year, under Joe Maddon, this has been a really good offense. And I don't know, big picture, what you do unless you simply replace some of those players, right? And it's been proven that the runners in scoring position thing is not a repeatable skill. You know, I mentioned last night Kyle Schwarber knocked in a run late with a double, but it was, I think, Addison Russell at first base. So he doesn't get credit for right. A hit with a runner in scoring position because the guy was at first, not at second base. Now, in Schwarber's case, he has not hit enough doubles. His slugging comes almost exclusively from home runs. So that is an area he definitely can improve. And he has not been good with runners in scoring position over the years, as we all know. So you always want to make that better if you can. Every team feels like it struggles in those less than two out situations. Get the guy in from third. But ultimately, I think you go with the offense you have, and I think it's one of the better offenses in this league.
So, Len, since getting shelled by Cincinnati, Yu Darvish has thrown 24 and a third. His ERA is 2.96. His batting average against is 167. Apologies. And the slugging against is 2.86. I've been the guy telling everybody, you know, take the start you've got from Yu Darvish one at a time. But are you starting to see some connective tissue between these four starts, between this last month or so for Yu Darvish, who starts Friday against the Mets?
It's by far been his best stretch as a Cub. The fact that he's throwing strikes is huge. The stuff looks as good as it's been. The stuff generally looks really good. I just see a much more confident and relaxed guy on the mound. And maybe the start he had in Los Angeles last weekend, maybe that was the breakthrough. That was the one thing that he hadn't kind of crossed off his list. Actually, there are two things he hasn't crossed off his list. It was the Dodgers, which he did, and winning a game at Wrigley Field, which he still has not done. So once I think maybe he gets that out of the way, the sky's the limit. But it's been encouraging. The first thing this year was, is he 100% healthy? Knock on wood, that's been the case so far. And he just seems like a much more relaxed guy to be around. Year two always feels better for a free agent as a Cub. We've seen it with Tyler Chatwood, and we're seeing it a lot now with Yu Darvish, and that's a very positive sign. And with Hendricks out, we don't know how long. I think Darvish's contributions become even more important.
Cool thing about baseball is you get calls that happen rarely, and you have to be ready to deal with them by understanding the rules and knowing what's going on. And there were a couple in this series already. There was the interference that was called on Jose Abreu, where there were actually it was a technical double play that was called.
Strike three.
And we had Leury García, who was hit by a batted ball, his own batted ball, outside the batter's box. And these are things that you have to apparently explain to people in real time. Take us through the situations.
Yeah, I didn't quite get the Abreu one right off the bat. We eventually did. What made it unique is that it was strike three, so Abreu was already out. So he wasn't really penalized, but in an interference play, the batter is called out, but if it's strike three, the runner is automatically called out. On the follow-through, on an incidental follow-through where there's contact made on a play like that, that is actually not deemed interference, and they will send the runner back to first base. So we had to clarify that after the fact. Last night, the home plate umpire was, I'm blanking on who it was, but I think he got it wrong.
He was bad. I know that. Whoever he was doesn't know a ball from a strike.
And I think that is a call that is rarely made for a reason. Most guys, when that happens, it's almost impossible to be outside the batter's box. And it looked to us like García still had one of his feet still very much in the box. And I think they simply got it wrong.
It was Corey Blazer.
Blazer, yeah.
And I don't understand. When you've got a crew like that, because that's Jeff Nelson and Laz Diaz as well, and I just don't know why home plate umpires, maybe embolden's not the right word, I don't know, but so many things are their call and their call only, like a check swing or anything like this. Just, you have three other guys helping you, use them.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And usually that call, when it is made and it is rare, is called by the home plate umpire. It's called pretty immediately. Mm-hmm. But when a guy, bounces a ball near the plate and then takes off for first base and it hits him, the other team's manager or dugout will scream, he should be out. And then almost every time you look at the replay and it's like, nah, he was still in the box. So I guess the fallback on that call is to never call it. And you're probably going to be right 99 out of 100 times.
I'm with you. It's like the opposite of a fumble in football where umpires and referees right. are told, like, just call the fumble and then we'll get it right when we get a replay. Yep. The easiest way to do this is never call it and then we'll figure it out on replay.
Exactly right. And I'm not sure that's reviewable. I'd have to look it up. I'm not sure that is a reviewable call. It may be, but I have not seen it.
If it's not, I'm sure the umpires union will tweet something aggressive about it and how it ought to be called.
If it were reviewable, Ricky should have challenged it.
That's true.
What I am doing right now is I am declaring this series against the Mets to be a Theo Circle It series. I don't know if Theo is circling it, but when you're coming off this particular stretch against some good teams and then you get all of the emotions of the home series against the White Sox and the Mets come in, these are ones to win. I am grabbing Theo's pen out of his hand and I am circling these as should wins.
I think that's a pretty fair statement. The Braves come in next week. They're the best team in the East. That's a four-game series. You'd love to count on winning three out of four, but you can't always do that. You don't want a 5-5 homestand, so I'm with you, Dan. I think this is one you do circle and say, you know, you really need to win 3 out of 4, which is not easy to do. They've got Jacob deGrom on Sunday. No Syndergaard. He's not pitching tonight. It'll be Walker Lockett, Jason Vargas tomorrow, Zach Wheeler on Saturday. But this is a Mets team that is at a critical point right now, and they're probably out of it, but they would have to go on a pretty impressive run to get back within shouting distance of even the wild card. So I think this is an important series for the Cubs to do a lot of damage. And the Brewers have their hands full this weekend. They've got the Reds, who are playing really good baseball, coming off a sweep at home over Houston. So, you know, if that's a 2-2 split and you win 3 out of 4, you create a little distance in the division.
All right, last question. I've decided that I only want to talk about baseball with people who have read The MVP Machine by Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sochik. Have you read it yet, and when will you read it so we can continue having baseball conversations?
Yeah, I've started reading it. I haven't finished it. I'm savoring it. I do have games to call every day, but
I don't care.
I'm probably 15% into the book, and it's outstanding. My favorite line from the book is, and I'm paraphrasing, not being stupid is way more important than being smart. And I totally love that. I think it's true.
We ought to get T-shirts.
Yeah. You don't have to be smart. Just don't be stupid.
All right. Well, you'll have it done by next week, and then otherwise we can't talk because that's the rule.
Fair enough.
Thanks, Len.
Thanks, Len.
Thanks, guys.
Len Casper brought to you by Arlington International Racecourse. They're off and running with live racing and entertainment at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse. Start your weekend right. Leave work early Friday for Miller Lite Party in the Park, live music, food, and $3 drink specials. Visit arlingtonpark.com for details and VIP experiences.
Can we get drafty?
Oh, I want to get so drafty.
Sam Vecini of the Game Theory Podcast knows it all when it comes to the NBA draft. The Bulls pick 7, or at least that's what they've got right now. We'll talk with Sam about what could happen tonight. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Good. Moretti and Mooney on the wings. Culver got the separation.
Oh, big shot. Woo! Stepping up big time. Dagger. Culver.
Mike be there at 7 for the Bulls. That's Texas Tech's Jarrett Culver. The bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Let's talk a little NBA draft. It happens tonight, and that's why we have Sam Vecini on the line on Twitter, at Sam_Vecini. He of the Game Theory Podcast joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Sam, how you been, man?
Hey, how we going, guys?
Going great, and this is a weird draft, and there's a lot of weird things going on just today. Everything in my Twitter timeline seems a bit upside down and confused about who's working out for whom and why and who could be on the move. What is it most important to know right now about tonight?
So I think that the top three is basically set. I mean, with like a small caveat that like there was like a weird rumor out there last night that like the Pelicans, I don't think that it's real that the Pelicans like were trying to get up to 2, but I mean, like, I don't think that's right. It seems like the top three is going to go, you know, the Pelicans are going to take Zion Williamson, the Grizzlies are going to take Ja Morant, and the Knicks are going to take RJ Barrett. And then after that, it is pandemonium, because I would say over half of the rest of the first round picks are being like legitimately discussed in potential trade scenarios. So it's hard to project who's even going to have the picks right now. Part of that is because we have this crazy offseason upcoming, right, with all of the free agents, and teams are kind of jockeying for position in free agency. Part of it is because the picks from, you know, let's say 4 to 23 this year, 25, something like that, they aren't all that special, right? Like, this is kind of a weak year in that area of the draft. I think it's great at the top. I think it's great in terms of depth in the second round. But, you know, in that area, I think teams aren't seeing as much value as what they typically see.
regardless of who ends up picking him at four, would you say that, just kind of reading around as best I can, you'd know more, Darius Garland might be the guy to go at four, regardless of maybe who makes that move? But it sounds like he's the guy around whom there's the most trade conversation. Am I wrong?
So, yes. I think that more teams than not have Darius Garland as the fourth best guy. The team that's been connected most with moving up to four seemingly has been Atlanta. Atlanta would not take Darius Garland at four. Obviously, they have Trae Young. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear mixed things. You know, is it Jarrett Culver that they would take it for? Is it DeAndre Hunter that they take it for? I think that I lean more toward it would be Hunter that they would take it for, because I think that they would want to get ahead of the Cavs at five. Because the Cavs would also take DeAndre Hunter at five. So I think that what's happening here is that there is just kind of a big group of prospects, and while Darius Garland is kind of the guy that you hear more than others, I do think that, you know, they're kind of a trio there of Darius Garland, DeAndre Hunter, and Jarrett Culver.
Let's assume the Bulls exercise their seventh pick, and they will have a choice. There will be any number of players available. We know that they covet a point guard to replace the disappointing Chris Dunn. Where are you on Coby White to start? Because I saw so much that I liked, Sam, but I just never saw him run pro actions. I never saw him with the ball using a ball screen as an initiator.
Yeah, you know, what he's really good at is pushing in transition and creating those odd man opportunities, right? What he is a little bit less good at right now is when you get him in half-court settings, you know, kind of using a live dribble and being able to create exceptionally well and snake through pick and rolls and get all the way to the basket. He took only under two shots per game in the half-court this season at the basket. That is a remarkably low number for a point guard. He's just not a guy who can get all the way there right now. He does have a nice step back pull up game that I think will translate pretty well, but you know that there is some real potential that he's kind of a backup combo guard. You know, he does have the elite mix of size and speed at 6'5" with, you know, just lightning quickness in the backcourt. But you know, I don't think it'd be a bad pick for the Bulls. I have him at number 7 on my board, but you know, he is a guy that there are mixed feelings, kind of as you alluded to, for a lot of the reasons that I just said.
Another name I'm seeing is Texas big Jackson Hayes, who is being comped to a Clint Capella type, a rim runner who, frankly, just is confoundingly not much of a rebounder.
I would actively laugh at the Bulls if they took Jackson Hayes at 7. Nothing to do with Jackson Hayes. I think Jackson Hayes is going to be like a fine NBA player. If the Bulls took Jackson Hayes at 7, it would be the most confoundingly stupid thing I have seen a front office do in a while, to take three consecutive centers at 7th overall in a draft. We saw this fail with Philadelphia, where Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, Joel Embiid, they end up with Embiid, but it tanks the draft, the trade stock, the trade value of the other two players, right? And they end up essentially with going 1 out of 3 on top 6 picks in the draft, right? It's just not the way that you can really competently run a front office now, I think. And again, like, this is not a statement on Jackson Hayes. It's a statement on, if you're genuinely considering taking a big man 3 straight years in the draft, you're doing something incredibly wrong, because it's a perimeter oriented game now.
What do the Bulls need to get done then? And how likely do you see any, we've heard a little bit of trade conversation as it pertains to the Bulls, but how likely do you see any move that could take somebody off the roster, perhaps to move up?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I think that they would have to go about it that way if they did want to move up. You kind of hear them being brought up a little bit like on the outskirts of the discussions for the number 4 overall pick. I do think Darius Garland would be a very interesting player to put in Chicago if they could find a way to move up for Darius. I think that'd be interesting. I think there's a world where Darius Garland falls to 7 as well right now. Like, I think that it's unlikely, but you could tell me that there's a world where, let's say, Atlanta trades up to 4, they take DeAndre Hunter, the Cavs stay pat, take Jarrett Culver, and then the Suns take Coby White over Darius Garland at 6. Like, that's a not impossible scenario to me. Again, I think it's one of, you know, probably 15 scenarios that is possible, but it's just a very complicated draft right now, and I think that at the end of the day, the Bulls should be considering all of their options in order to end up with a lead guard that they can build around coming out of this draft.
On a raw materials pure upside bet, and also understanding that John Paxson and Gar Forman are, one thing they're really, really, really good at is changing timetables in a way that keeps the pressure off of them. In that respect, you're laughing.
It's actively laughing, too.
That's active laughing, but am I wrong?
They do it well.
They're good at it.
I mean, this is what happens when there's no job pressure on you because
Correct.
Jerry Reinsdorf is the boss, right? Like, you can kind of just do what you want.
That's the world in which we live here, and we deal with that realpolitik as we talk about all of this, but that's what brings me to Sekou Doumbouya, who played for Limoges in the French League. He's originally from Guinea, 6'9", 230 pounds, wonderful athleticism, but incredibly raw. You know, you fall in love with a Pascal Siakam, and you look at the Greek freak, and you think maybe the Bulls would just say, yeah, get off our back. We're going to take this guy, and it's going to be a while before he's any good.
I think that he's a couple years away from being like a high-level player, like on a winning team, right? I think he would be a totally reasonable pick at number 7 for the Bulls, if only because he adds, a certain modicum of athleticism to their front line. He's a very, very fluid athlete, a great advantage scorer. I think he's going to shoot it at some point. He has pretty good touch already. It's a little bit inconsistent right now. He shoots kind of a moon ball, like very, very high, almost hits the rafters, and then it comes down and, you know, makes it about 34% of the time. So it'd be a reasonable pick. He is the kind of athlete that I think will translate nicely to the NBA. But, you know, you look at guys like this in the past, that have come in a little bit raw, right? Like an Al-Farouq Aminu, it took him mm-hmm. three teams, right? It took him until he was, what, 23, 24, and with the New Orleans Hornets to really get to the point where he was a good basketball player, and then he signs a big deal with Portland and really comes into his own. So, you know, I think that a guy like Doumbouya, it'd be a reasonable pick based off of upside just because there's not really anyone else that teams are in love with in that range, but there are some real downsides there that could end up in him not being particularly useful for a couple of years.
Sam, are the Pelicans going to run the whole clock down before they end up taking Zion Williamson? Why can't they? Silver should just go, the NBA draft has started and Zion Williamson is going to the Pelicans. We move on. Like, what are they going to take this whole clock?
I hope not. I want to, like, even I live on the West Coast and I want to get to bed faster.
Hell yeah.
After this thing. So, like, I hope that they, Adam Silver starts the clock. You know, maybe they make him walk off just for fun.
Just like turn back
David
around.
Griffin's like, hey, yeah, this would be fun. And then David Griffin, like, literally meets him halfway toward the stage and just goes, hey, this is our pick. Just go. Just stop. Stop this. One reason why the Pelicans would run it all the way down is if they have not made a trade with number 4, they might want to, like, allow for more time to potentially have, like, an offer come in at the end of the day here and try and make that happen. So I'm not going to sit here and say it wouldn't be unreasonable, but I would think that, you know, this should be a pretty quick process. I'm with you on that one.
Sam, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Yep, anytime, guys.
That is Sam Vecini of the Game Theory Podcast. So now they have to take Jackson Hayes so I can use that quote.
Oh, man.
Go back and transcribe that. I would actively laugh at the Bulls. Hey, if you are a sports gambler mm-hmm. and you are looking forward to enjoying the fruits of SB 690 when it is finally signed and enacted and sports gambling is allowed, our next guest has some information that you're going to want about the opportunity for you for a sports book for your enjoyment. And we're going to find out how some of this stuff is going to be implemented, how and when we get some of this brick-and-mortar stuff going on. So if you're a gambler, you don't want to go anywhere. You got the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Give me a single-digit number, please.
Give me 6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Caller 6 at the contest line wins a pair of tickets to join the Score's Lawrence Holmes Tuesday as he hosts Wilson Contreras and Albert Almora Jr. at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigley for the first luncheon of the 2019 Cubs on Deck series presented by TimberTech and Xfinity. Joining us now on the Albemonte Ford Hotline, Albemonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from, is the president and general manager of Hawthorne Racecourse, Tim Carey. Tim, how you doing? Welcome to the Bernstein McKnight Show.
Good, guys. How are you today?
Good. Your world has certainly changed with the passage of SB 690, the opportunity to open a sports book where you are and maybe reinvigorate horse racing for you and for all of Illinois. What's coming up?
That's and that's truly the intent of the bill. I mean, we've been at this thing for 15 years, trying to convince the legislature to do this, and it's to reinvigorate horse racing, which we think we can do. I mean, there's signs that with sportsbook and with casino gaming, and certainly in other states, it has reinvigorated. So certainly we plan on doing that here at Hawthorne as well as throughout the state of Illinois.
How do you guys look at the potential for mobile access to folks who can now bet or will be able to bet here? What does that do for your plans and, like you said, the reinvigoration of horse racing?
Well, what it does is the stats coming out of New Jersey from sports betting is that anywhere from, 30% to 45% more betting is happening because people are in their facilities because of sports betting, betting on horse racing. So we're hoping that with a sports book retail here at the track, more people will come in, more people see our product, and of course, more people will be betting our product and stuff. So I think what it is, it's just a reminder in terms of the mobile aspect of it that, we're going to be out there in the marketplace, and therefore, we'll be thinking about Hawthorne and horse racing. And it's not that the people are going to come out, every week, whatever the case is, but certainly if they come out on a more regular basis, that will help the agribusiness called horse racing.
Are you going to do this all on your own, or are you partnering with somebody to do sort of a plug-and-play venture here as far as the actual brick-and-mortar full-blown sports book?
Yeah, we're gonna partner with somebody. We don't know officially what that is just yet, but we don't have the wherewithal. It's not what we do, and so I think to hit the market the way we want to hit it, I would have to partner with somebody for sure.
How much did you let yourself dream about this bill and its passing? Like you said, it's been there for 15 years, and it feels like even longer than that. How far did you get down the line on what it would take to partner, build a place, brick and mortar kind of stuff, or did you just kind of have to keep it in your back pocket?
I my head's still been under sand in the sense of I haven't come up yet because, I mean, the bill happened so quickly, which we're thrilled about. We're just very, very excited about the opportunity that we have, I think it's gonna, it's gonna take us some time in terms of what we think we can do, but we couldn't be more excited for horse racing and being able to now really expand it. Hopefully,
well, what do your revenue projections suggest could happen to the quality of the meat, to the overall handle, to be having these paydays that are going to attract the best and the fastest?
I think, we between ourselves and Arlington on the thoroughbred side, we probably give away $20 million in purses, which is, a national low. And so by reinvigorating it, it's probably going to be at least in the 40, hopefully the $60 million range. So you really can start running, more grade one races, which is your top race, such as the Kentucky Derby and whatnot. And so to be able to offer those and really, have the excitement of that event, in addition to, all that goes on with sports betting, in addition to all that goes on in gaming. It's going to be great for our location.
Lastly, Mike Zaleski made a point that I really hadn't considered, that he thinks Illinois as a state is a sleeping giant as far as, I'll use your term, the agribusiness of horse racing. If Kentucky, with they brag about the quality of their water and their bluegrass that the horses are eating, what can be done, and what is the overall reverberation of this for farming, for some of these areas downstate to be more in the business of raising horses?
Well, and that's what we've argued all the way through is we've had farmers, people that have owned horses, of course, that they've left the state. And as an example, 2007, we have 2,100 stalls on the backside, and we had over 2,700 horses apply. Now we're lucky to get 1,000. And so in addition to that, the Department of Ag down in Springfield, they said as soon as this thing passed, their phone that week was ringing off the hook in terms of people wanting to get back into Illinois horse racing. So, one, it's the state of Illinois. It's a great state. And so, therefore, in a great city, Chicago, why wouldn't you want to live here if you had a choice of other surrounding states? And so we think that it's certainly going to reinvigorate, and it's certainly going to help the breeding end of the industry and the trainers and everything about it, the vets. Everything that we've been arguing for, now we really get to put that on display and build what we want to build.
All good stuff, Tim. We appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Thanks, Tim.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
That is Tim Carey, president and GM of Hawthorne Racecourse since 2005.
Hey, if you're looking for something to do on Friday, come out to the Xfinity store in Arlington, East Rand Road. I'm going to be there. So will Cubs outfielder Albert Almora Jr.
Give him a haircut.
That's some serious salad is what it is.
His helmet is flying off.
It's
so
fighting
easily.
The helmet. Yeah, I know. And we're going to be out there from 6 until 7 p.m. You can come out and meet Albert. You can compete against four prizes against me, which apparently is an easy win. You can enter for a chance to win Cubs tickets as well. It's brought to you by Xfinity, the official Wi-Fi provider of Wrigley Field. That's Friday, 6 to 7, the Xfinity store in Arlington Heights. Be a fun time.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. A reminder, Bulls draft coverage on the score. Even though there is a baseball game on, you get draft coverage live on 670thescore.com via the radio.com app. Wall-to-wall stuff, Swirsk and Wennington, Cashel, Westerlund, Schuster, and Tony Gill, and then Schuster will be on the score after the Cubs game is over. But everything you need is going to be right there. We're going to say good afternoon to Lawrence Holmes next on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.